Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
On Criminal, we bring you true crime stories told by people who know them best.
We didn't believe in setting fires because that was too dangerous. We were, you know, a kind of gentler kind of crooks, so to speak.
So the best plan you had was that you'd lasso it.
Yeah, never imagined I'd use it for a camel.
I'm Phoebe Judge, and this is Criminal. Did you have to say what was in the box?
Phoebe, we told lies.
Listen to Criminal every week, wherever you get your podcasts.
A new social media campaign is targeting celebrities who haven't spoken out against what's happening in Gaza. But is it working?
The sort of block out movement is a lot more about the shifting attitudes towards celebrity than it is about really achieving anything, because yes, Kim Kardashian has lost followers, and there are some cases where celebrities are seeing a dent, but I think this movement misunderstands how traditional celebrities make most of their money.
I'm Taylor Lorenz, and we'll be talking about the celebrity blockout this week on Power User.
Welcome back to another episode of the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez.
And I'm Andrew.
And today we've got a bunch of interesting, quirky things to talk about that have happened in the past week. One of them would be the fastest charging we've ever seen. One of them would be the fastest car we've ever seen. And then a bunch more stuff in between. Also, you might have noticed we've got a little bit of a new intro vibe, the new music. It's feeling pretty good. Shout out to Vane Sill, who's obviously extremely talented. He's made videos. He's made music in MKBHD videos before. Just leveling up, covering the podcast too. The guy is incredible.
Yeah, and a big shout out to Cameron Barlow, who made the original music. I think we've told the story, but he was one of the first people to ever send us music when we started Waveform, and everything we got sent after that was nowhere close to as good. So
yeah, he crushed it.
OG Waveform music. We're taking a new chapter, but big shout out to him because that was huge. 2 years almost, I think that was going.
So awesome. Now, you've got all you wrote here is Andrew rant about Pixel 4 XL. Yeah. I have no idea what you're ranting about, but
yeah.
The stage is yours.
I'm just gonna let's the elephant out of the room. I'm still using a Pixel 4 XL. Just because you work here doesn't mean you've got Marquez does, but we're all not reviewing the phones as much as Marquez. I'm using it. I like it. I like the phone. It's been good. I didn't love the Pixel 5,
but
it is, out of all the phones I've had in my entire life, it has caused me the most issues ever, hands down, out of everything I've ever had.
Okay.
And right now I'm at the point where I can't use it unless it's plugged in. And this kind of stems, I think, all from possibly the same issue, but I'll go back a couple months ago to first had my big issue with it.
Right. Not just software bugs. You mean problematic?
I don't believe it's software at all. Got so the first thing that started happening was probably 4 or 5 months ago. I noticed the back glass was a little off on the top. And I noticed it because I had a skin on the phone and I was like, oh, the skin just looks way too thick. And I realized it was actually because the glass was starting to peel off. And at first it didn't seem that bad. It just looked like a little lip and I didn't think anything of it. But fast forward maybe a month from there and that lip now has a gap in it. So just the whole back glass on the phone is completely peeling off.
And that was because of the battery swelling?
I don't know what that was because of. I have no reason. I don't know exactly what it was, but it was enough of a gap that I could see lint had gotten inside of the phone and inside of the camera lenses.
I can't think of any other reason for the back glass of a phone to literally rip out of the glue and come off the back of the phone.
I had seen some things online of people having similar issues, and some of their thoughts, one was battery swelling. Mm-hmm. Another thought was just potentially heat or something, just making the adhesive not good enough to where the adhesive is now just coming off and not keeping the glass on the phone anymore.
Okay.
Because of that, my solution to it was to put a drop of super glue on the top and then start using a case. I haven't used a case in a while, but I've been a case person mostly because of that. Because even with like the super glue, if it fixed it, I've pretty much lost confidently waterproofing the phone anymore, yeah. Right? Like there's no reason if that seal is broken.
Don't get that anywhere near water.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, that in itself, I've been much more careful with the phone. So then maybe 3 months ago, my next problem started where I was using my phone one day and it was at 50% and the battery, my phone just turned off as I was using it. And I thought that was really strange. Clearly it was at 50%. I don't know what happened. And I plug it in and I get this battery icon with a question mark on it. And that never, ever feels like a good sign.
A battery icon with a question mark.
Yeah. So like the black screen, normally when you plug it in, you'd get like a red battery icon for your phone being dead, which it shouldn't have been because it said 50%, mm-hmm. but I got just a question mark.
Battery safety shutoff is going to be my guess.
I still am not 100% sure of what it was. But so my solution that night when it happened was, okay, I'm just going to plug it in and I'm going to leave it overnight and it's going to charge. It was close to bedtime and I didn't feel like finagling with it for that long. Wake up the next morning and it still says, I turn it on and it says 50%. I was like, there is absolutely no way this could be physically plugged in the entire night and still be at 50% battery. And I don't know what I eventually did to fix it, but it started working again. I eventually got it to the point where when I turned it off and plugged it in, it had the red battery icon with a percentage. So I knew it was at least charging, which to me, that was a step up because it hadn't been doing that before. Fast forward to the next time it happens a couple weeks later, and I started researching a bit more what's going on. People are saying that there's something wrong with the battery connection itself and that the battery is fine, but the connection and the reporting to the phone is what's messing up. So in that process, one of the fixes, which I can't believe I even tried because just reading it online seemed so dumb, it was turn your phone on, which it has to be plugged in to turn on. Turn your phone on, turn Bluetooth off. I don't know what this part accomplishes, but turn off Bluetooth, unplug your phone, turn it off, and then you, an inch from the bottom and an inch to the right, you press your thumb as hard as possible on the back of the phone, and then you plug it in and it starts charging. And it worked. And I didn't really question it. I kind of was hoping it was a one-time thing, but then it's about 2 weeks after that happened again. I did the trick. It worked. I did the trick probably 4 or 5 times until last night, finally, same thing. Phone. It's really weird when it does it too, because like the phone starts stuttering a bunch and like feels like you're just like out of storage almost, or like it feels like a really old phone and then just dies.
I feel like I understand your problem. I feel like I get it. If I had to guess, this is, it just started with your battery like having some sort of problem, mm-hmm. swelling up a little bit. So the battery swells up right off the bat. There should probably theoretically be some safety protocols in place when a phone detects that its battery is having problems.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants that bad PR of like, it just swelled up and exploded in my pocket. So I'm guessing once that happened and separated your back, the phone realized at some point battery's not okay and started limiting what it allows the battery to do. If you realize the battery is having a problem, don't allow that to charge to 100%. Don't allow that to get to zero. Don't let that battery discharge too fast. So when your phone starts stuttering, it's probably limiting the battery so much. The voltage of the parts is also going down. I bet if you replace just the battery of that phone, everything is back to normal.
I agree with your solution, mm-hmm. but I don't think that's exactly what's happening. And the reason I don't think it's limiting it to like charge 100%, or like you're saying you think it's dying at 50% because it doesn't want it to go to zero. Right?
Yeah, I'm saying it's limiting what the battery is physically able to do for safety reasons.
I think the battery itself, at least in the sense of it's still getting to 100, because I had charged it to 100% plenty of times when it wasn't doing that. And every time, the couple times when it like at 50% died and I got to fix, like within a couple minutes did the trick and got it to turn on again, the battery is completely dead. So I think it's losing some sort of connection and its default is just set it at 50% as
battery.
Is the battery
dead or did it just auto shut off for safety?
It's dead because when I would plug it in and get it to work, it was at red battery, 1% battery.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a problem with the the connection and the way it's reading the battery level, and then probably being safe and shutting off. Or I don't even know. It's definitely dying. It's 100% dying because I'm getting 1% battery.
Yeah, you just need
there's
new
no
battery.
Way it's like, yeah. That's what the solution seems to be. Google will apparently RMA it, but when you're in a pinch, I wanted it to work and I just kept doing the trick, which is probably the bad thing to do. And now it keeps doing that. So now I have to figure something out.
I would have bailed the second it started swelling the battery.
Don't know if the battery's swelling, but I am 100% today after recording this going to open the phone up and see what's going on in there. Yeah. I'll post pictures on Twitter or something like that. And,
okay.
But right. I'm kind of excited to see what's in there.
Well, speaking of dangerous batteries,
yes.
Segue, we've got a story and it's really just a tweet, but yeah, Xiaomi tweeted... Or actually, Ice Universe tweeted this, but it's a Xiaomi video. Xiaomi released, and when we say released, that's in air quotes, they've demonstrated this technical ability to do 200-watt wireless charging.
No, wired
sorry, charging. 200-watt wired charging and 120-watt wireless charging. Which, again, those are some crazy numbers, but to put them in context, Samsung's fast charging right now is 25 watts. Okay.
Wait, really?
Yes, 25 watts.
Oof, I didn't know that.
Some of the fastest charging in any phones right now would be your 65-watt fast charging.
They did Oppo do 120
at the
watt?
The very bleeding edge, highest end, there may be a phone or two that supports 100 or 120-watt fast charging, which is crazy fast.
It wasn't the Lenovo one that, but you had to put two wires
plug
in to do it?
Plug in both at once, which is insane and beautiful for a video thumbnail.
Yeah.
This one, 200-watt wired charging, is, I think they demonstrated it on a 4,600 milliamp hour battery or something like that. Literally, they plug it in, and I'm not even exaggerating, within 45 seconds, you've gotten 10% battery. You can watch the battery percentage go up in 45 seconds to 10%. The whole thing's done in 100% in 8 minutes. Zero to 108 minutes. Now, obviously, cool. All right, great. You've demonstrated this crazy ability to pump huge voltage through that wire and through that port and into that battery. What's the catch? Which is like, Xiaomi's not going to tell you.
The catch is it might catch on fire.
I honestly think they've probably mitigated the catching on fire part. It's easy to make jokes about it's going to explode and like it's never going to work. I just think the discharge rate is going to be just as fast. Like how long does that battery last?
Yeah, like both overall lifetime.
Overall lifetime and like how many charge cycles you can have, but also in like daily use. Like
you think
how,
so? You think it affects?
I think it might affect the overall discharge time of the battery in day-to-day use. If you can upcharge that fast, then you can output that same speed. I don't know this for a fact. I just know that there has to be a catch.
There's got
to
be a catch.
There's got to be a catch.
My initial thought would be the catch is battery life. Not like, not day to day, but just overall in general.
Health.
Like, health. Great way. But I also think what's crazy about this is 120 watt wireless charging is now the fastest we've seen wired charging in wireless form.
Yep.
Instead, I almost feel like when you reach down to pick it up, you're going to like feel the energy. Like a little like force field of just like power around it. Like
this
what
phone,
happens?
This phone already gets. I'm holding a OnePlus 9 Pro for audio listeners. But you should check out the YouTube version. This phone, when it wireless charges, it gets warm.
Yeah.
And I put it on this wireless charger, and the OnePlus wireless charger has fans in it, so it's blowing those fans while it's charging quickly to keep the temperatures down because it knows that wireless charging just gives off a lot of heat. It's not super efficient. Mm-hmm. So when you pump that much wattage...
What's the wattage on the OnePlus charger?
That's a good question.
Wasn't it like 75?
A little less than that, I think. Okay. And you have to buy OnePluses, by the way, to get the maximum speed. 50-watt wireless charger.
Okay.
So, but it gets warm and like to the touch.
This is where, more than double that?
Yeah. I take the phone off the charger and I'm like, wow, this is kind of toasty. And I wonder when you take that phone off of the 120-watt wireless charger, if you can just like immediately crack an egg and fry it on the back of that phone. Because... That's something else.
Wasn't it it was like the HTC U Ultra, that mirror finish one where the press kit came with a white glove because of how many fingerprints?
Yeah.
I feel like this charger is going to come with a glove what are those fireplace tongs that you put the login with?
Yeah. Yeah. This will be interesting. Xiaomi does this a lot and we don't necessarily get to see it happen in a phone. Like we might not have 200 watt wired charging in a phone this year, but it's cool that they're pushing that limit. My question is, are we going to get to a point where it doesn't matter how fast it charges anymore? If every phone charges at 150 watts, are we good? Do we stop?
Never.
We keep going? 300 watts? 400 watts? When is it going to...
What point do you just like tap it on something and you just have full battery again?
It's that weird... I think the better version of this future of battery tech is long-range wireless charging so that you're almost always at 80% everywhere you go. I think that's...
Like in-room wireless charging would be really cool.
Yeah, because then you don't have to worry... because then you don't have to worry about my phone battery is low, let me go to a charger. I think this plugging in a wire will eventually be an old version of what we think of what charging used to be. And now, or not now, in the future, we won't really think about charging ever because we'll always be somewhere near this wireless charging happening. Now, again, the what's the catch question always comes up with that. Like, is that safe if it's always radiating through our bodies? Yeah. Is it going to be a problem? Will my phone get warm in my pocket as it's charging? I don't know all the answers here. But I imagine with all the downsides of both of these versions, I would rather have my phone always at 80%. Rather than going from 0 to 100 in 2 seconds. That just seems crazy.
I mean, I would also just like a better built battery where I can fit 10,000 milliamp hours in the size of a phone that is right now. I feel like at some point we're going to stop improving the charging tech and the batteries just have to improve as well. Yeah. But
do you have a lowest speed you'll go or a highest speed? Like, I don't really have goals for batteries anymore. Like, I feel like they're good.
We work in a situation where battery charge is like... almost never an issue. Like I rarely find situations where battery's that big of a deal. I guess like if I were going camping or something or hiking or a long day out or ultimate tournament, which I don't do anymore, but that's when I would ever really push it. But at this point, I don't know.
Yeah.
I never really get towards the end unless it says 50% and it's not really and then just dies. So
I'm imagining Xiaomi going, oh, we did it again. Now we have 300 watt wireless wired charging and it goes 0 to 100% in 6 minutes flat. Great.
It sounds like it's more of a headline for a while until then it won't be kind of like, why can't I remember? DxOMark, great headline.
DxOMark's got to start doing
it. Doesn't really matter anymore.
They gotta start doing battery charging ratings till you get over
that. 100%. Actually sounds way more interesting than what they're actually doing.
Why?
I would just like to see if they could scientifically just test how it's affecting battery health and how fast it's actually charging and then how it's charging at different percentages and stuff like that and give it an overall score. It's a much less subjective rating system also because like the biggest complaint with DxOMark is that it's like pretty subjective to what they think is a good photo and it's scientifically driven based on their subjective viewpoint. So battery can't really be it either lasts or it doesn't.
I think this video literally, I mean, you can plot out on a chart the 0 to 100% battery, which is like it goes real fast at the beginning, like I said, 10% in 45 seconds and then evens out and you're done in 8 minutes. And I can't imagine much faster than that being particularly useful, but great. I'm glad Xiaomi's getting there. Maybe put it in a phone. Speaking of 0 to 100 real quick, I'm on a roll. Rimac Concept 2, which has now been renamed to the Rimac Nevera. So the Concept 2 started making a little bit of press runs. They've been working on this car for a long time. For those unfamiliar, the Rimac Concept 2 or the Rimac Nevera, we did a video on the Concept One, which is $1.5 million tiny supercar, you know, mega hypercar that's fully electric.
Very tiny,
very electric, very fast. They only made like 8 of them. They're making a larger run of these, but they're going to be 1,900 horsepower, massive power, 4 motors, 1 at each wheel, and these are going to be hypercars. And they've been calling it the Concept 2, and they're starting to like get to finishing development on it, and they've been saying like, oh, we're at 85% power. We're at 90% power. Oh, really? We're almost done. I saw a Car Wow video where they now have done a drag race with the Nevera and the Ferrari SF90. And again, I just want to give context because the SF90, it's not $1 million hypercar, but that's just about as fast as a car gets today. We are looking at the fastest ever production quarter mile times of like any street car ever made. And I think it's like top three of all time. It gets 0 to 60 in like 2.3 seconds. It gets to the quarter mile in well under 10 seconds. It beats the McLaren 765LT off the line. It's like a $500,000 car. It's incredible. This car makes it look like a toy. It literally blows past it. And the crazy part is like the SF90 is a hybrid. It's got this great launch, and then it combines the electric motors with the gas power. This Nevera did not have a problem with it. So if you watch that video, it does 0 to 60 in 1.85 seconds. Oh my God.
I mean, we're getting to the point where production cars now have to be, we have to look at the hundredth of a second to like kind of really differentiate now, because Roadster is claiming 1.9, right? So right. 1.85, it clearly wants the headline over Roadster, which also, how long until Roadster gets a software update? And they're trying to beat that.
The thing about that time is you are basically approaching the limits of traction with rubber tires. So when you say 1.9 versus 1.85, it's like on a perfect prepped surface with the exact right battery and the perfect launch. That's as fast as you can go with motors.
Wait, quick question. With electric, is there such thing as like a non-perfect launch?
Like people go to a prepped drag strip with sticky tires and you're a sticky pure like, grip, launch environment and they can maximize traction almost artificially because the streets aren't like that. And they will get 1.9 seconds. But on the street, it's never going to be that fast. You're always hunting for traction on street surfaces. The point is, it's not going to get much faster than this with just tires. So I think Roadster is using some tricks.
What's funny about that is, and what I think is funny about one of the things I read about this is because of how fast that is and because of how powerful that is, they have this like driving AI and like a built-in driving coach that inside the car teaches you how to properly handle the car because it assumes people just straight up cannot handle that. And it's coming at $2.4 million and only 150 made. So
it's like when you
don't
have to
mess it up. You need to teach someone how to drive this.
You know when Judner did that fighter pilot like ride along? They had like a two-seater.
I vaguely remember it,
They had like a two-seater jet that you get to ride along and you have to learn to like contract your leg muscles to keep the blood above your heart and like breathe a certain way to stay not blacking out. Like if you need to give lessons to people, you probably shouldn't be selling it.
I mean, there's only 150 of these, but like we kind of had this conversation, like let's assume we get to the technology where tires can handle it and these can go faster. At what point does the human driving it become the limiter of how fast? I know there's got to be an actual answer to this, right? There's got to be some physicist out there that can help us.
It would just be how many G's you can handle.
Right? Like how before you just pass out.
They were saying the 0 to 60 in 1.1 with the SpaceX Roadster with the like cool rocket thrusters on the back is like 2.5 G's. And it's fine because it's 2.5 lateral G's. So if you just get kicked in the back and you just get shoved forward at 2.5 G's. You won't black out, but you'll really feel it. But humans don't really go too far past 2.5 G's like on a regular basis ever.
At what point does the 0 to 60 still count if it self-drives the passed out human in the driver's seat past 60, gets the time, and then someone has to like give CPR to...
If you win the race, you win the race,
I bet that would still hit a headline. I think we covered everything we wanted to with Roadster.
I mean, I'll toss in there top speed 258 miles an hour. 20 kilowatt hour battery pack, is that right?
That's what I pulled from the article.
That doesn't seem right. 120 kilowatt hour battery pack. Okay.
Oh, I missed the one.
That'll do it. 120. I mean the current top of the range stuff is 100.
That number still means not much to me because I haven't experienced living with an electric car, so that's just total size of battery pack. I just don't know what is a...
Yeah, I mean, so the older Teslas that were 75D were a 75 kilowatt hour battery pack. Then they had the 80D, the P85 Plus. That was always the number of the kilowatt hours. Yeah. So then they had P100D.
I understand that.
100 is like the standard right now, but the future stuff will be over that.
I can't get a concept of how big this car is. It does look bigger than the other one, but it's the other one was like... under your waist, tiny. And then lengthwise, this looks like much longer and much more similar to, I mean, maybe what we assume Roadster is going to be like. It looks really good too.
Yeah, from the one time I saw Roadster in person, it's not a small car. I mean, it's a low car, but it is like Aventador big. Like it's still got some length to it. This to me looks somewhere in between.
Or what about like original Roadster?
Original Roadster is tinier. It's much smaller.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's gonna be a like Huracan plus.
This one?
For context, yeah. Okay. I think so. But either way, I'll probably never drive it. I mean, if Rimac wants to get one out here to the studio,
didn't he tweet at you or something?
He did want us to get our hands on one. Yeah. And I would happily do a whole autofocus video with it, living with it. There's only 150 customers that can even care about something like this, but I would happily
I would
do
assume
a video.
At best, he'd give it to you on like a track or something.
I would do that.
But yeah, that sounds awesome. Sounds fun.
Sick. All right. Well, let's take a quick ad break. We'll come back because we've got to talk about Tesla removing features and some other stuff that's been in the news. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway.
And I'm Ed Elson.
And we're the hosts, the co-hosts. It's kind of unfair to call us co-hosts. I'm really the host. He's he's my Robin Givens. Let's just be clear on what this is. But anyways, we're the hosts of Prop G Markets, your go-to podcast for all things money. Every Monday, we provide brash, unfiltered analysis on market-moving news, high-flying stocks, growing sectors, stupid boardroom decisions, and master of the universe CEOs.
And on Thursdays, we speak with some of the world's greatest finance professors, Wall Street insiders, and industry experts to keep you informed without getting bored. So if you want to understand money and how you can get more of it, you have to talk about money, and we're here to help you do that. Follow Prof G Markets on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts to automatically receive new episodes every Monday and every Thursday.
That's right. The good news is we know how to get you economic security. The bad news is the answer is slowly. We'll tell you how on Prop G Markets.
Support for the show comes from Anthropic. Companies of all sizes are exploring use cases for AI and finding that it's not a one-size-fits-all game. It's all about finding the right balance between speed and intelligence. Like if you're powering a customer chat experience, you need instant speed at low cost. If you're doing complex R&D or advanced analysis, you need frontier intelligence. Claude 3 from Anthropic offers AI models for a variety of tasks and budgets. Claude 3 Opus is their largest and most powerful model that can handle complex tasks and analysis. Sonnet strikes the balance between information and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and most cost-effective model that can execute lightweight actions fast. Anthropic's dedicated to building AI systems that are reliable, interpretable, and steerable. Their multidisciplinary team of researchers, engineers, policy experts, and business leaders designed Claude to elevate the field of generative AI. See for yourself. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic. All right, speaking of electric things moving fast, Tesla is constantly changing their cars. This is something we've talked about in Tesla videos in the past. I made a video about how you can look at it multiple ways, but Tesla doesn't have model year numbers. It's so traditional to just have a 2020, 2021, 2022, and every single car you get from that model year is based on the same thing plus options.
Yeah.
Tesla doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. They will refresh the tech when it's ready, and they are constantly rolling out micro adjustments to software and hardware, tweaking things, adding ventilated seats, changing the headrests, lumbar support. Random things will just change in the car, and you just kind of get the car based on when you bought it.
And it seems like the way people generally find out about a lot of these small ones is through forums like Reddit or Twitter or something like that, where they're like...
There's
Am I wrong in there? Okay.
There's three ways I would say that people find out about the change to the cars. One is, none of them are through Tesla sharing it themselves. One will be Elon will respond to a customer about something on Twitter. Like, hey, my car has this harness. Is this new? Mm-hmm. And he'll go, yeah, all the cars produced after November 2020 have this new thing. Two will just be, like a subreddit post or somebody spying a car somewhere that has a new feature on it.
Or there's a lot of people who take delivery, realize something's different, and then it's people confirming that with their new deliveries, and then they use the VIN number to
confirm kind of when it was when made.
If your car will have it based on
exactly
that VIN number.
So, you know, once in a while the configurator changes and you see a substantial difference, but a lot of times this stuff is just kind of quietly happening. Mm-hmm. So the latest one is like it was just the right combination of changes to make a nice headline where Tesla's prices went up a little bit and then they removed like one or two features. So
which is
like
also... price fluctuation is something we're used to as well with them.
All the time.
Hitting two of those, like you said, perfect storm, price goes up, something gets removed.
Headline.
Big old headline.
Easy. Yeah. This one was a little more interesting that they're getting rid of radar in their cars. And I thought this was more than just like a micro adjustment. This is actually sort of future looking as far as their autopilot.
Reading the headline as someone who doesn't know specifically what radar does or own a Tesla, it feels like a huge, huge headline.
It's
like
really interesting.
Getting rid of radar.
Yeah.
I didn't know much about it, so I quickly just like Googled it, and the Tesla subreddit's pretty awesome. Just like a bunch of people, owners going back and forth about it. I usually like to read that before I read some articles. And top comment was, it's because their current radar is beyond useless for anything other than ACC, which I also don't know what that means.
Active cruise control.
Okay. It says radars from 2010 has major issues distinguishing stopped objects, has a very only forward and low field of view, low resolution and range, and can't classify objects. And then it also, in the like rain and snow, has a hard time.
Yeah. Okay. I have some thoughts on this.
Okay.
They're a little bit mixed because I understand the vision. That's a pun. Tesla is moving mostly entirely in the future towards 100% vision-based autopilot.
Yeah.
Which means they will only use the cameras on the car for sensing what's around the car and steering and driving, reading signs, seeing cars, recognizing objects on the road. All of that will happen through the cars, cameras on the front, cameras on the side, cameras on the back. And this is something that's been like a sticking point in like different companies' strategies for autopilot. So Waymo, for example, will use high-resolution maps and sensors on the car.
Mm-hmm.
We did that ride in Las Vegas where we rode around in a taxi that was entirely, you know, driverless.
Yannex.
And that was using high-resolution maps. And it was a cool demo, but if you ask Elon about it, he would say, that's useful in that one high-resolution mapped area, but it's not broadly applicable for the entire globe. You can't high-resolution map the whole world if you just want to go down a trail somewhere or just have your car drive you to the grocery store. It has to work everywhere. So their Tesla strategy has always been, we're going to use all the sensors on the car and just look at what's around and map our way through whatever situation we're in, and the car will be smart enough to understand it. Now, going vision only and removing radar seems smart because it should be able to use visual cues to identify everything. And like they mentioned, radar can't identify stop signs. Radar can't really tell what's a car and what's a truck. That's all happening from the cameras. But I found radar to be a useful extra sensor for a couple small things. One is, that low field of view has notoriously bounced underneath the car in front of me to see the car in front of the car in front of me and show that car on the map.
Yeah.
So if that car breaks, my car already knows before the car in front of me breaks, it's going to start to get ready to break just in case. Like, it's got a better vision in inclement weather. This is something, I guess it's a little controversial, but like cameras can get frosted, you know, ice over them. Cameras can have a hard time in the rain and the snow. And radar doesn't have nearly as much of a problem with rain and snow. It's still, you know, very rudimentary and low resolution. It's seeing the car in front of you and the car next to you, but at least it's seeing something where a camera might miss it. So I always felt like radar-assisted vision was pretty much the right move. It's a good combo. But now, Tesla's shipping Model 3s and Model Ys with no radar sensors at all, just the cameras. And because they're making this switch, all of these new cars people are getting have slightly reduced autopilot functionality just for safety. They're, you know, only going up to a certain speed, and they're obviously not working as well as the cars with radar, and they're planning on, with software over time, catching back up to the cars with radar. It's just a tech thing that Tesla does sometimes where they make a change and some of the cars are different from the ones on the road. But I find it interesting. I'm curious if it's going to catch up to radar-assisted vision, because I always felt like radar assisted vision was great.
I read the whole Reddit thread of like owners talking about this, and there's a couple things people were thinking. One is kind of like what you're saying. They, you know, despite maybe it being an outdated specific radar that they're using, they did appreciate the redundancy and something that, you know, it's ultimately driving your car and could be your life if it comes to that. So like, we like redundancy in that for sure. There are also a lot of people who think, and I forget exactly why, but there's some people who think that they're going to eventually upgrade the type of radar system that they're using and right. in the future could potentially be another radar system, just getting rid of the one they currently have now. But did Elon make like an announcement that they're switching to only that, or is that just an assumption because of the lack of this radar?
No, they've made it clear that they want to go vision only.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then that seems so it's unfounded.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious if it's actually going to work. Basically, I've learned not to bet against the eventual inevitable future of what they're working on, but I didn't see any good reason why that redundancy isn't a good thing.
It's like you can bet against or not bet against the eventual future, but that doesn't mean there won't be hiccups and some bumps along the way that process. I think that's like the best way of describing Tesla. Like they've made it to where they want to. There are certainly a couple hiccups along the way, though.
Yeah.
I could see that with this.
The road to the future was never smoothly paved.
Don't even have radar to tell if it's smoothly paved or not. One other thing, you kind of mentioned it briefly, but another kind of headline, which I thought was kind of ridiculous, was it looks like people are finding out their new Model Ys do not have lumbar support in the passenger side. And for anyone who is upset with this headline, my first question I want to ask you is, have you ever gotten into somebody's car in the passenger seat and adjusted the lumbar support?
Because
I have never, ever done that.
That's a good point. I don't think I've ever adjusted the lumbar support as a passenger in a car. But also, is it losing adjustable lumbar support or is it just losing
adjustable lumbar support?
Yeah, it's
I guess I don't know if I honestly don't think most people can tell if a seat has lumbar support or not. Maybe I'm being naive there.
I think
I've never changed it in my driver's seat.
I think we're being ageist.
Ageist?
I think we're being too young here.
I've got a pretty awful back.
As a person who has started to have occasional back things, I feel like I care about the lumbar support, but I'm the driver, so I don't really mess with it too much when I'm not the driver. But
I guess does every seat had necessary, like every seat has some sort of lumbar support,
yeah.
right? Like
yeah.
I guess Tesla's not exactly known for the like high quality of their seats. There was that whole like Chevy, these are Chevy Spark seats, blah, blah, blah. I'm assuming it's not that anymore, but I guess losing it, I don't know. I've had 4 knee surgeries. My back is terrible. Like, for being 30, my back is way worse than it
Have you ridden
be.
On the passenger side of my car?
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
I have no issues with it.
It's
I mean,
fine.
Maybe on a long trip, I would be less comfortable than maybe some other seats, but like nothing about it. We drove to Boston that one day and I was totally fine. I was passenger seat the whole ride.
All right.
I certainly didn't adjust it. I can tell you that.
From what I hear, Model 3 and Model Y's seats are much better than Model S, much better than my seats. Hmm. So if it's even better, I'm not complaining too much.
Yeah.
I get that it's a removed feature and
exactly.
it makes a nice headline, but
I understand that people don't like seeing this is more expensive and has less things, but I don't feel like lumbar support's the hill to die on for that.
All right, here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, so we know Tesla doesn't do yearly updates with their cars. Do you think this new crop of electric cars and new companies coming out will follow in the same footsteps and also not do model years? Is that the future of cars, no more model years, or will they all eventually fall into a 2021, 22 thing?
So my thought on that, kind of, if I can talk about F-150, I know we've talked about it a lot, but I think it kind of has to do with the market they're targeting. Right now, Ford's... When we talked to the guy from Ford who brought the F-150, who was absolutely fascinating, by the way, just hearing all the stuff they've went through being a legacy car manufacturer who's now diving into the EV world, their huge goal and like a big reason they did that 1,000-pound EPA mileage was like they don't want anyone coming to EV and being disappointed with it. So I think if you are Ford in the F-150, you have to do yearly updates because that's what people are used to. And people who are buying cars in that market, pickups specifically, are used to that. If you're Rivian, who clearly doesn't have a market already, I think you can go the Tesla route and do that. Ultimately, maybe this is just because we're used to it. I would like to see some sort of a yearly update just because it's easier to keep track of things and keep track of features and additions and subtractions.
Yeah.
I don't think it needs it. I think it's fine. Everyone with Tesla has made do. It almost turns into a game with this whole like, my VIN number doesn't have lumbar support. Like,
yeah.
I think it's kind of funny. Maybe not as the owner of the car, but as an outsider, it's kind of funny.
As someone who it's bitten in the past, I'm please make it more predictable. I think it's interesting. I was going to say it's an interesting point. I was thinking it's just going to be about the company making it. If it's an old company, they're going to be stuck in tradition and they're just going to keep doing model years like Ford. But if it's a new company, then they don't care at all about that. But I do think if you are a, even a Rivian for that matter, or Porsche, you want to make things simple and easy to understand. You do want to make some sort of yearly or like well understood updates so people can know exactly what they're buying at any given time.
So like them getting, there are a lot of traditions in car manufacturing and car selling that I despise. Yearly updates is not one of them. I think it's just easier marketing. It's easier for people to understand. I mean, even just the used car market can get kind of confusing when you like, you maybe you see the new RAV4 and you're like, oh, I want to go get a used one. This is listed as a 2012 and you see it as a totally different model. Like it's much easier to keep track with that.
Yeah.
What I love that Tesla does differently is like dealerships. I wish we would get rid of those. But yearly updates, I think is, you're not losing much by continuing to do them.
Yeah, I guess cars are such a large, complex thing. Like even in tech, like you have yearly updates for everything. Mm-hmm. Like you have the 2021 iPad and you have the Galaxy S21 and the S22 will be next year. And you have like these yearly updates. So when you want to go back and analyze the old ones or maybe buy a used one, you can go, let me see the model year from this. This is the year they did that with the screen. Like mm-hmm. you always know by the model year. So I hear people talk about older cars like, oh, if you're getting an F-150, like avoid the 2007 to the 2013. They did this weird thing with the engine. Like they just know that that's what happened. But if you're trying to do that with Tesla, or if you ever look at trying to buy a used Tesla, it is kind of a mystery other than the basic specs what you're going to get. Will you get ventilated seats? I don't know.
We're still pretty new into the like used Tesla market, right? I mean, I know they've been around for like 10 years at this point, but still, it's pretty common to buy a 10-year-old car and used, because especially if it's a lease or like a rental that's then getting sold used, they're usually perfectly fine if they have 50,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
So Tesla, it's really cool because in theory, batteries last longer than typical gas engines. So then you should be able to sell Teslas on the used marketplace for longer and longer, and they should hold more and more value. But it's so much harder to market that used car because
it's a piece of tech.
Yeah, it's a piece of tech. And because it doesn't have yearly updates, you could say a 2015 Tesla Model S, but if they made a change somewhere in 2015, that could be two completely different.
Which they did. They made a huge change in 2016.
I didn't mean to hit a strike a nerve on that one.
Will you have autopilot or not? I think so. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. No, it'll be interesting to follow. I kind of feel like, Tesla gets away with being the exception to the rule for so many things, but I also do like that they break and really don't adhere to so many of those traditions of the older car industry. I don't mind not having dealerships. Totally fine with me.
Please, 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 please. Don't they have to, though, to sell cars in Texas? People have to go, like, outside of Texas to buy the cars because of, like, some dealership law? I don't want to get too deep into it, but that's
just another
hilarious.
Ancient piece of legislation that has been applied to dealerships and happens to be awful for Tesla, but hey, that's just the way it is in 2021. We'll take a quick break. Let's come back and talk about maybe Tesla burgers.
This week on The Pitch, we're back to pitches, and this one's coming from my job.
What podcast AI does is it lets podcast producers become 10 times more productive.
How much are you charging The Pitch?
We're charging $99, and Josh came in right before we doubled our prices.
Mm-hmm.
What's keeping something like a Restream from just going like, yep, we do all this AI now stuff too?
So there's a lot of these older companies that are tacking on AI, and that's kind of the issue, they're tacking it on.
You built this really quickly. What's to stop anybody else from doing this? What's the moat?
How do you build a moat when you're building with AI? That's this week on The Pitch. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's loud, deafening, cacophonous.
It's a nightmare.
Oppressive.
And just what is it that many people think is pretty nightmarish and yet are still willing to shell out quite a bit of money for a night out at a restaurant?
Sound is the number one complaint that diners have about their experience. So why are restaurants so loud, and when did that start happening?
Is there anything anyone can do to fix it? We've got the answers on the latest episode of Gastropod.
All that, plus the science behind the perfect playlist to accompany your meal. This special episode is part of our new collaboration with the podcast Switched on Pop.
Find Gastropod and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Tom Warren, senior editor at The Verge here. Microsoft is in an era-defining moment. It's betting on AI as the future of work, its Xbox business is going through transformational changes, and the Mac versus PC war is about to be back on. So, I'm launching a newsletter called Notepad. It'll be your inside guide to all those changes and beyond. From details on the next Xbox, to that one time every Microsoft employee named Michael appeared on a mysterious email list. Whatever is happening at Microsoft, you'll be able to read about it first in Notepad every Thursday. Go subscribe now at theverge.com/notepad.
All right, speaking of not knowing what you're going to get from Tesla, we've got a headline from Electric. You like that segue, right?
Yeah, you've been pretty on today.
I've been on the money.
After you destroyed mine last week.
But this is good.
I'll let you have these.
This is good. So it's really just a trademark filing is all we have, but the concept is really interesting. So apparently back in 2018, Elon Musk said that Tesla plans to open, quote, old school drive-in roller skates and rock restaurants at one of the new Tesla superchargers near LA. This is kind of like is he joking or is that like actually like a plan that he has to do? And then Tesla actually did file for the trademark for, I guess, a sort of burger joint type thing where they could eventually, Tesla trademark registration is intended to cover the categories of restaurant services, pop-up restaurant services, self-service restaurant services, and takeout restaurant services.
Oh.
So now the natural idea is, well, every time you're supercharging, you probably want to grab some food. That's like probably the number one activity people do when charging for a while.
I would say that's the best way to sell supercharging to somebody who's... So like when we travel pretty far in your car, the one main thing is you have to stop to charge at some point. And most people don't like... The biggest argument between gas is gas takes 2 minutes to fill up. Mm-hmm. Charging can take like 20 minutes to not fill up, but, you know, get you far enough to where you go. Every time we would stop, we would plan it specifically to eat in that time. And by the time we would eat, it would be plenty of time to do that. So it doesn't even really feel like you're charging or making that stop. So if you add a restaurant or food to all of this, it makes perfect sense because then as long as you keep your road trip planned out accordingly and there's good food there, it almost won't feel like you're refueling.
Yeah, it feels like it also feels like a smart business decision if you're Tesla. Right now, you're investing all this money in building superchargers, right? Mm-hmm. So naturally, you're trying to be smart about where you put the superchargers. People are going to want to stop at rest stops, malls, like obviously restaurants and things like that where it's easy to take a break and have a bite to eat. So business 101 is why not make money from that too? Like if you can build your own rest stop, and have Tesla superchargers and a Tesla merch shop and burgers and like a whole bunch of the most common activities for 20 minutes while charging, that's a good investment because you make your money back from it. So I could see that being like a casual thing they start to do and experiment with. I think they just file the trademark just to be safe. Like that's just a thing companies do. But I don't know if they have plans for like people rollerblading out of, you know, a door with a burger on a platter or whatever. Yeah. But it's just kind of a fun idea. I think it makes sense, though, like business-wise. That just makes sense.
You weirdly hit a weird gripe I have with not anything Tesla-related, but about road tripping.
Uh-huh.
It makes me furious when I'm on, like, going for a long trip and we're trying to find somewhere to eat, and in Google Maps, we type in restaurants or type in a place we want to stop at, click it, and it brings me to a mall. It makes me so angry. Like, I've been driving 4 hours. All I want to do is grab something to eat. And now you took me 10 minutes out of my way to be at a mall where I either have to park the car, walk all the way inside the mall, sit down and get something to eat, or I guess get it to go. But like, just differentiate that.
Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense for this now, though, because if a Tesla supercharger is at a mall and now out in that back parking lot where the charger is has something you can grab to eat, makes way more sense. Although, with 20 minutes, you probably could run into the mall, but Google Maps, please. I just want that one feature so bad. Just
this is a thing,
bringing me to a mall.
This is a thing in Tesla superchargers too. So I was driving up to practice, which is above New York near Connecticut, and I was a little bit early. So I was like, oh, let me just, you know, stop at one of the nearby superchargers and charge up for a little bit just because I have time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just picked the one on the map that was closest to it and drove to it. and it was like in the bottom of a parking garage that was like underneath the bunch. It was like just tucked away, like hard to find and annoying. And I wish there was some sort of indicator on the map of like, this one's in a parking lot. This one is in a paid parking garage that you need a ticket to get into. In a mall. Like those are, that should be different on the map because I really don't feel like doing that. Although some of them, some of the parking garages, if you are only there for 20 minutes, they don't charge you, luckily, which is good. But yeah, that was kind of fun to see. But yeah, no, I think that that like restaurant and just take just the overall like vertical integration of like, okay, Tesla owns the property, Tesla owns the chargers, Tesla will probably have solar panels because they want to do renewable energy at all the chargers. Tesla will make that energy. Tesla will sell you food while you're there and probably merch and probably other stuff too. And they just own the entire pipeline. That's what a good multi-billion dollar company probably looks like in the future as far as like autonomy and charging on the go.
And one of those things specifically stood out where it says self-service restaurant. So like it even doesn't need to be a full-blown diner, restaurant kind of burger joint or even something like that. If it's just like a pretty easy, like similar to like those new Amazon shops out west where it's like you walk in and there's not even someone working there. You just like, or there's people restocking, but you grab it and it tells what you took, and then as you walk out, it charges you for it. You're just not even a cashier.
So are those like, good yet?
I mean, no, but we're talking about the future here. Like, this is just a trademark. We've got a while to go.
True.
So I was thinking, see that being out of the question.
I was like, what is a self-serve restaurant? I can't think of like what that is, but I guess, you know, the Whole Foods of the future where you just walk in, grab the thing, and walk out and it charges you is the idea?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably prefer it to be people there cooking and it's like fresher food, but it could also just be something simpler, wraps, sandwiches, pre-made stuff, stock it up in the morning. Because like you also have to think about, this makes great sense, but you have to be, have a high enough profit margin for the people who are now working there all the time. And what are the hours going to be? Is it going to be 24/7? There's a lot of questions and we're still just at the trademark, but I think it could be really cool.
Yeah. Wild speculation on a trademark is my favorite.
Oh, yeah. It's what this podcast is all about.
Yeah. Speaking of wild speculation, oh, man, I'm crushing. I'm crushing.
Is this a speculation?
Segues. Yeah, because this is a rumor.
Okay, okay.
Cool. speaking of wild speculation, we've got a Huawei P50 rumor slash image slash leak from Ice Universe.
I just opened it and the top comment is you just saying LOL in all caps.
it is an image. I'm just going to paint a visual picture for you. So imagine the back of a phone, right? Mm-hmm. On the back of the phone, somewhere in the top left, you have your camera bump. Now I want you to look at the back of your phone and divide it into quadrants.
I have a really good way to describe this, I feel like.
I'm just going to say, if you could picture the back of your phone into quadrants, top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right, picture the entire top left binoculars. Two huge circles.
Just looking at you. This looks almost looks like to me, do you know how John Rettinger does those thumbnails where he's focusing on cameras on smartphones where it's the smartphone back and he dislocates basically the camera bump and zooms it up? This looks like maybe like the iPhone XS, which had the vertical two camera.
Oh.
And then John Rettinger zooming it out and just slapping it back on the back of the phone.
But it's weird because it's got three cameras inside the top circle.
Yeah.
And then another camera and a flash inside the bottom circle. I assume the bottom one is like a large like periscope lens or some sort of large module.
Like that Sharp phone that's rumored.
Yeah.
You know that one with this just like one giant camera?
Yeah. So the fact that it's in a larger circle is purely aesthetic and they're just leaning into this circular aesthetic. And so it just looks like binoculars on the back of your phone.
I think the best way to describe it is imagine a vertical two camera system that's gigantic and then there's cameras. That's just the bump. The cameras are inside what you thought were the cameras. Because when I first saw this from the corner of my eye on your screen, I thought it just had two gigantic cameras on the back.
That would be
And I don't know if that would be better or worse.
I don't think
both of them would just be bad.
I don't think a phone's thick enough for cameras to be that actually huge. I think this is just an aesthetic.
I don't even know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a look. It's a look.
It's a look.
Man, Huawei, if this is actually the way the P50 looks, be prepared for the memes. Because you know, some companies do things for the memes. Be prepared.
Wait.
It looks like Wally. That's another good one. Oh, if you just scroll down the comments.
Yeah, the comments are good. There's more stovetop ones, like the old.
I highly recommend you scroll down and look at the memes.
We'll link
this
in the show notes. Yeah.
This is great. Same energy.
So turntables.
Oh my God. This is great. Sonic microwaves. It's good.
I don't know. It's
dead mouse ears. Interesting. I haven't seen
that. Dead mouse ears. That would be, I feel like you could skin some cool things on this and use that as inspiration on top of it. But like,
yeah,
it's just a weird look. I don't know. It also has a flash in between them.
It's great.
I don't really get it.
I mean, the focus of so many of these new smartphones coming out is just the cameras and the differentiation of the cameras. And we already know Xiaomi, Huawei, they're not afraid of a big camera bump. Like, they're not afraid of going absolutely nuts with how crazy the cameras look on the back of a phone. Whether or not their cameras are actually the best in the business, debatable, but they're not afraid to have a crazy camera bump.
I still think if you're going crazy camera bump, you go horizontal and you go as high up as possible. So when it leans on the phone, it's almost like a wedge. Like, I kind of imagine the Pixel 6 rumors, which, you know, has that big, like, Daft Punk looking horizontal. If that continued up to the top or was closer to the top edge, I think that would be like perfect. But this is just going to have a crazy wobble.
Yeah. And it's going to wobble a lot.
Yeah.
Speaking of wobble, no, just kidding. I'm fresh out of segues, but I'm fresh out of topics. We've talked about a lot of stuff so far, but honestly, I think it was worth it.
You actually wound up segueing the end of the
fresh
out of segues, like fresh out of topics. I think that was the best one of the episode. Let's go.
I crushed today's segues. A+. Feel free to let me know how I did in the comments, but I'm pretty sure I crushed it. Anyway, that's about it for this week. We'll be back shortly. Of course, we've got a lot more to talk about. And WWDC is next week.
Speaking of WWDC, we are going to have a Discord stage event next week.
That's the plan. WWDC is going to happen. And then we're going to talk about WWDC probably live with you guys on Discord and in video form. So stay tuned for all that and more. Of course, there'll probably be a lot of announcements on stage. I'm excited for that.
I'm sure that next week's going to be a lot to talk about.
It's going to be hype.
Yeah.
Either way, see you guys then. Thanks for watching. Catch you guys later.
Waveform was produced by Adam Molina. We are partnered with Studio 71, and our intro outro music was created by Vane Sill.